Good morning. Welcome to Mountain Money. This is Larry Warren along with Doug Wells, and we are looking out on pure blue sky, not a cloud on the horizon, not really a cloud hardly all week. That's both the good and the bad news, I guess. Temperature's very high.
Beautiful early spring morning. Larry, I think it's been about a month since we've had a pretty Monday.
Been
kind of blustery the last couple weeks.
Yeah. Well, we are headed to a high of 55 today, low of 30. So it's the big melt is on. We have temperatures in the 50s and by Wednesday into 60 degrees here. So the cross-country ski tracks are wearing out and melting out, and spring is here.
Yeah, and speaking of the big flood, time now to buy those sandbags before you need them.
Yes. Hey, we have a good show today. We're going to start with Mike Quincy, who's on hold right now, the car editor of Consumer Reports magazine, and their 2017 auto issue is coming out now. It's, what is it, the April edition of Consumer Reports. And we've had Mike on several times, especially when this car issue comes out, so we will be talking all things cars to start the show.
Yeah, Larry, I think it's fair to say that talking to the Consumer Reports about their car edition might be one of your and my favorite interviews of the whole year, so you're going to want to stay tuned.
Well,
on
who
that.
Doesn't like talking cars?
We always have a great conversation with Consumer Reports. Our second guest is going to be Daniel O'Banion. He is the director of Utah Divisions of Consumer Protection. Larry, apparently nothing is safe in our world anymore. Apparently our utility bill is subject to scams. And we all get utility bills, so you're going to want to listen in to find out more about this scam. And then our final guest is Corey Finley. She is with Team Rubicon, which organizes a group of over 43,000 volunteers of ex-military or current military vets that do first response to emergency situations. And they're going to be up in Utah's Box Elder County, not all 43,000, a subgroup of them, which is facing ongoing flooding from the spring runoff. So it's going to be a good show. We're going to lead off with Consumer Reports, so you're going to want to listen in. This is Mountain Money on KPCW, and we'll be back in a moment.
Gordo here, and I'm Larry with All Resort Group, a proud sponsor of KPCW.
We provide transportation to the airport, Park City, and Deer Valley, utilizing private black cars, SUVs, and shared ride van service.
Reservations at allresort.com or 649-3999.
We move people.
This is Ryan Hoffman, manager at Mountain West Bank, sponsor of KPCW. We're a community bank with a great understanding of our local needs. Mountain West Bank has something unheard of nowadays, but I can't say it on the radio. We're next to the movies near Kearns Boulevard at 649-3369. Division of Glacier Bank, member FDIC, equal housing lender. Cookies on Fridays.
And welcome back to Mountain Money, and we're going to bring Mike Quincy into the conversation now. Good morning, Mike.
Good morning, guys. How's it going today?
Just fine. Yeah, we always look forward to the auto issue because you guys test cars like, I don't know, like nobody else in the U.S., I would imagine. So let's start before we get into the makes and models and what's good and what's not based on your testing. Talk a little bit about how you test cars, because it's a pretty pretty thorough, amazing, and expensive story.
Well, I also got to thank you guys very much for that wonderful build-up before I came on. I love talking to you guys, too. And yeah, I'll talk about cars all day, every day. So I'm based here in Connecticut, and if you're hurting for snow, show up tomorrow because we're going to get 12 to 18 inches. And we have a 327-acre facility here, and we test about 80 cars a year, all types, from small economy cars to sports cars to pickup trucks. And we put them every car that we buy through a full battery of testing. And we do buy all the cars we test. We don't take freebies from manufacturers. We don't take advertising. So we can really kind of tell the truth about what works and what doesn't work on all the new cars and trucks that people are considering buying.
Yeah, and that track, I'm looking at a picture of it. It's got a long straightaway to open it up. It's got some curvy country road kind of things and a big circle and Yeah, you guys, how big's the staff that puts them through their paces?
There's about 24 of us that work here at the track, and that includes the automotive engineers, the statisticians, their editors, writers, administrative people, maintenance facilities guys. And it's really kind of neat to look over my shoulder out the window and see this track in my, you know, kind of my backyard. It doesn't feel like I'm going to the office really.
Yeah, I want your job. Okay, well, let's talk about cars and specifically cars that work for our mountain snow environment and mountain roads in the summer and so on. And for us, that means four-wheel drive or all-wheel drive. And you break them down from luxuries to small SUVs and so on. So let's talk about the SUVs first. And you know, up here, maybe we get a skewed view of what people in America drive. But because up here, every car is an SUV and generally a Subaru. But have SUVs kind of taken over as the kind of favorite platform for American motorists?
Yeah, I think you're spot on, because there was a time when station wagons really were the family car of choice, and then it kind of morphed into minivans, and now we're really going through a pretty chunky SUV phase. I mean, this phase has been going on for probably 20 years or so. So these are kind of here to stay. And in terms of a top pick in our April issue of Consumer Reports, you mentioned Subaru. And the Subaru Forester is our top pick for a small SUV, standard all-wheel drive, excellent 26 miles per gallon overall, and that usual Subaru reliability. The Forester is an easy one to recommend. If you need a little bit more space, I would check out the Toyota Highlander. That's Consumer Reports' top pick for a mid-sized SUV. Whether it's a V6 model or the hybrid, you're going to get decent fuel economy for the class, three-row seating, excellent reliability, and you know that usually high Toyota quality.
You know, I think Larry's just showing off a little bit here, because he drives that Subaru Forester, which, of course, he knew you were going to say that. So that's one of the
good.
Top,
I didn't have to brag that, about that, my acumen in picking cars.
He loves that car. We'll get back to that in a little bit. But, you know, so those are the good values. Frankly, I was surprised at your report that showed the owner's views on best and worst values. And what surprised me was the worst value for luxury midsize to large SUV, the Tesla Model X. I know you guys really liked the Tesla Model S earlier, which is a different car. The Model X is the one with those golf wing doors that look really cool, but apparently the owners aren't that happy. What's the problem with that vehicle?
So the Tesla Model X has had a lot of reliability issues, lots of squeaks and rattles and things gone wrong. That really has kind of tanked this car in Tesla's lineup. I mean, you're spot on about when we talk about the Model S and how that blew us away, how the road test score of 100 was really quite phenomenal.
But that's on a scale of 100.
Correct. That success did not come over to the Model X. Which has a very awkward driving position. It has the gull wing doors are kind of awkward when you're inside. Say you're in a tight garage, they might not always be graceful with their covered if their car is sitting outside is covered in snow. So there are a number of Tesla owners that told us that the reliability has not worked out very well, and they haven't been very satisfied with the car overall.
Yeah, well, let's. That's kind of a shocker. I hadn't even heard about that model car, but it sounds like it wasn't maybe all that well thought out. Yeah,
it's not inexpensive either. It's $80,000 to $115,000.
Yeah, I'm thinking. Here in a foot of new snow, flipping open the gullwing door could be pretty disastrous. Let's talk about car brands in general and who's at the top of the heap and who's at the bottom. And I see poor Fiat again comes in at the bad end of the scale. But can you look across all models of a car line and find winners all the way across the line?
Well, when we're looking at an overall brand report card, we take into account the overall score of the models in our testing, predictive reliability and owner satisfaction from our surveys, and kind of come up with which brands are really getting it done. And this year, not surprisingly, some of the more higher-end brands that are very desirable, Audi, Porsche, BMW, and Lexus, round out the top four in that order. But you don't have to spend a lot to get to buy into a brand that we think is doing a lot of things well. I mean, we come back to Subaru. Subaru is producing models that are fuel efficient, reliable, doing well in Consumer Reports test. The Subaru brand comes in fifth overall, followed by Kia, and then Mazda, and then we mentioned Tesla before, and then Honda, and then Buick. So while a lot of times you pay a lot, you get more. You don't have to pay an arm and a leg to get a brand that is going to deliver a lot of value and satisfaction.
You know what jumps out at me looking at that list is you have to go down to eighth place before there's an American car.
Well, that is true.
And there's only two in the top 10. Otherwise, these are all foreign manufacturers. They may make some of their cars in the U.S., but American manufacturers haven't gotten their mojo back yet.
They're consistently mid-pack from year to year, really. I think Ford produces a number of competitive models in Consumer Reports testing. Their overall reliability tends to be about average, but they really haven't cracked to the top of tiers of the other manufacturers when it comes to overall score and road test score. General Motors produces a significantly impressive model line. Their cars have done well in Consumer Reports testing. Two of their Chevrolet sedans are top picks in the April issue of Consumer Reports, but they're let down by their reliability, mostly by their trucks, which is too bad because they did well in our testing. But our subscribers have reported worse than average reliability in a number of their models. But bringing in the bottom is the Chrysler organization, which is not too surprising considering that a lot of their product line is old, and they have a lot of reliability issues.
If you're just joining us this morning, our guest is Mike Quincy. He's the car editor of Consumer Reports magazine. Their April issue is their car issue. Mike, I want to talk about safety now. I'm at the stage of my life now where I have teenage daughters, and so the safety of a car is really important. And you have a column in the magazine that talks about the impact of forward collision warning and automatic emergency braking. Tell us what that is and why that's so important.
Well, forward collision warning is and automatic emergency braking is kind of one step closer to autonomous driving. People talk about the cars that drive themselves, and this is the kind of technology that exists with this. The data shows that forward collision warning and automatic emergency braking are reducing accidents. So Consumer Reports is a big advocate of these technologies, and we feel that they should be standard on every model and every trim line. A lot of times in automotive technology, you have to buy the top trim line to get the latest hardware and software. And we think that is not the right approach when it comes to safety. We give more points to models that have standard or easily available safety equipment, and we don't think that you have to say you're buying a car that has a trim line that starts with a DX and goes all the way to EX. We don't think you should have to buy the EX model to get all the latest safety equipment.
Is that how high impact safety features have rolled out in the past, or did it take a law? Like with airbags, was that something that they started including in all cars at all models, or is there a law that says cars have to have airbags now?
Well, there's a law that cars have to have this passive safety features, and airbags are better than those old automatic belts. But yes, you're absolutely right. The high-end models got the first airbags. The high-end models got the first anti-lock brakes. the high-end models got the first stability control. And we're seeing that in, with all of these autonomous safety features as well. The high-end models are getting it standard. The mid-level models say you have to go to a higher trim level to get it. But we, you know, we think, and with safety in mind, and I have a teenage driver in my house too, and I want my son to be in a car that has great safety features and shouldn't have to spend an arm and a leg to get them.
Well, let's one last question on safety, and then we'll get to some of the more fun aspects of these cars. You know, there's a general impression that small cars are less safe than big cars. Is that true?
Well, you really have to compare them by category. For example, you can't ever overcome the laws of physics. If a little smart car is broadsided by a Chevrolet Suburban, yes, the Suburban wins. So, but that doesn't make the smart car unsafe per se. You have to look at small cars within categories. Compare the Toyota Corolla, for example, with a Honda Civic. And those are the kind of crash comparisons that you have to make. You can't look at something that's twice as large and compare it to a smaller car. So smaller cars are not inherently unsafe. They have, you know, more agile handling. They're lighter on their feet. And instead of thinking I'm going to survive the crash, find a way to avoid the crash altogether by quick braking and steering.
You know, Mike, your ratings for cars put Toyota Prius very high, and you've put Model S of Tesla as your most perfect 100-point scorer. Hybrid cars, battery-powered cars, are we seeing more, and is the reliability continuing to get better, and are they on par performance-wise now with internal combustion engines?
The battery-powered cars, the sole, you know, battery-powered cars like the Tesla Model S, have inherent limitations in terms of cruising range. For example, you might get 200, 220 miles on a full charge from a Tesla Model S, but then you have to, you know, plug in and charge up, and that's going to take a while. In terms of just, you know, the energy that you're getting out of an internal combustion engine, if you fill up a Toyota Prius, you're probably going to go about 500 miles without needing to get more gas in the tank, and it takes only about 5 minutes to fill up your tank of gasoline. So that we're seeing advancements in battery technology. Hybrid models are better now than they've ever been. The Toyota Prius is, in fact, a Consumer Reports top pick for a hybrid, a compact car. It gets an amazing 52 miles per gallon. And for all the years that Toyota has sold the Prius, and we're going on, I guess, almost 20 now. We have reliability data that shows that they're very complex cars, but they have excellent reliability. So we're really pleased to see that that automotive technology has gotten to the point where you can build cars that are both reliable and fuel efficient. Certainly, Toyota has unlocked the key to this.
So fuel efficiency is important, unfortunately less important now in an era of $2.50 gas, which I think is one of the reasons the SUV popularity has come back up. But talking about fuel economy, I did not see it in the magazine, but perhaps it's on your website. What about carbon footprint? That's something that people are concerned with. So electric cars obviously get great mileage per gallon, quote, you know, when you look at it that way, some of the numbers are over 100 miles per gallon for these hybrid cars. What about the carbon footprint? Have you guys looked at that, and is there a place people can find that data?
Well, we've looked at the impact of gasoline engines versus hybrids versus pure electrics, and I think it's a fair point to say, where do you get your electricity from? A lot of people think that if you drive an electric car, you are doing a great favor to the environment. However, in the Northeast, the vast majority of our power plants are still old coal-fired plants, which are not friendly to the environment at all. It doesn't matter what the coal lobby says; it's not clean energy. But in the slightest, if you're getting your energy from hydro, if you're getting it from wind, you're getting it from solar, it's a cleaner source of energy, And in that case, you definitely are helping the environment. But we're not giving the cars a carbon footprint rating per se. But we have definitely written about it extensively in the past.
You know, let's carry on the conversation in the final few minutes here now to, okay, what do you buy so that you retain resale value? Or if you're a used car buyer, what do you look for in terms of brands and models in used cars? Does it follow that those, I would think it would, that those you rated highly 2 or 3 years ago are the ones that are going to come up on top as the most reliable and best used cars?
Oh, you absolutely hit the nail on the head. Certainly the best new cars definitely do make the best used cars. And you can save a ton of money buying used. You buy a 2 or 3 year old used car. It might even have a little warranty left. It'll probably have the latest safety equipment available to you, and you save a ton of money because the used cars, the new cars lose a ton of their value in the first 2 years of service. So find yourself a 2 or 3 year old, say a Honda Fit, a Toyota Corolla, a Toyota Prius, a Honda Accord. These models have done well in Consumer Reports testing, very reliable, and they make for great used cars. And in some ways, it's the best buy out there, especially if you like a luxury car. Luxury cars in general lose their value very rapidly. They're the steepest depreciating type of models. So go out and get yourself a 2 year old Lexus, and you'll save a ton of money.
So, Mike, we can't. End the interview on best used cars. You start off the article with sports cars. Let's end this conversation with sports cars. You highlight the Mazda Miata. If you want to talk about that sports car, if there's another one you want to talk about, what was your favorite sports car?
Well, the Miata is definitely a great choice for a top pick for a sports car. It's right up front in our April issue of Consumer Reports. This is a magical car with a great shifter, incredible steering, excellent handling, even good fuel economy, good reliability. I want to be out in Park City in the summer driving around the mountains in a Miata any day of the week. I'm putting the top down, I'm putting sunscreen on, and don't call me because I'm not going to pick up my cell phone.
Now that's a note to end the conversation on.
However, you'd have to be able to put a mountain bike rack on your Miata. I don't know if that's
the
possible.
Back. You can get one of those car.
Okay, because everybody around here has to have a rig that can haul bicycles. Although, in the winter we have one guy running around town with a Lamborghini with a ski rack on it.
I haven't seen that. That's awesome. That's awesome. Only in Park City.
I can't top the Lamborghini.
There you go. Mike, thank you for joining us this morning.
My pleasure.
Appreciate having you. Well, when we come back, we're going to talk about scams making their rounds around Utah now. There's always a few, and there's a couple of new ones out there. We want to warn you about them. First, let's take a look at the weather. Heading to a high of 55 under sunny skies today. 63 tomorrow, 60 on Wednesday, 57 Thursday. So this is going to be a warm and sunny week. There's a slight chance of showers by Thursday night. That's the only chance of anything happening in the forecast. So it is spring skiing. I was out Saturday, and I decided the optimum hours, Doug, were between 11 and 1.
Yep.
Before 11, it was frozen still, and after 1, it was just so slushy, it was hard to move
around. I was out Sunday, and I agree with that. So not just the weather forecast, but there's the snow conditions forecast from Mound Money. We'll be back in a minute. Please stay tuned.
Hello, I'm Justin Keyes. As an attorney in the Park City office of Jones Waldo, I'm pleased to support Mountain Money on KPCW. Our firm provides construction, real estate, and general business legal services to the Park City community. We are online at joneswaldo.com and can be reached at 435-200-0085.
Mountain Money on KPCW is sponsored in part by Columbus Pacific Properties, presenting Viridian, 21 new residences along the 11th fairway of the Canyons Golf Course with year-round amenities and gondola access. Summers on the fairway, winters on the slopes. More information at ViridianParkCity.com.
And welcome back to Mountain Money. Next guest up is Daniel O'Bannon, and he is the director of the Utah Division of Consumer Protection. We have him on the line now. Good morning, Daniel.
Good morning.
Yeah, we had you on the air a couple of months ago talking about the, I don't know, top 10 scams in going around Utah, and you've put out another alert saying that you're especially concerned about one dealing with utility bills. So tell us about that one.
The reports that we've received on this are that people are calling Rocky Mountain Power customers and are claiming to be with Rocky Mountain Power and that they're going to shut the power off if this person that they're calling doesn't make a payment. So they're, you know, calling and claiming someone's behind on their bill and they need to pay right now.
And that's not what Rocky Mountain Power does. Well, you could call just about anybody and they're going to be a Rocky Mountain customer.
That's right.
It's not like they have to have secret access to a customer list. They could pretty much just call anybody. And that's not how Rocky Mountain Power handles past due accounts.
It's not. And that's one of the big red flags here for anybody who gets this call, that Rocky Mountain Power isn't going to say, you have to pay right now. You haven't heard anything about this up until this point, but you have to pay right now, or we're going to cut your power off. And not only that, but you need to pay by going and buying some reloadable payment cards at a store and then come back and give us the code, the numbers for that.
Well, I would think that would be a huge red flag, and most people wouldn't fall for that. So are they preying on the elderly here?
Surprisingly, the reports we've received are that this is targeting businesses. And you think you get a busy business owner who gets a call and thinks, oh, I thought I had taken care of that, but I can't have my power shut off. And you can, unfortunately,
so let me run
to the find
7-Eleven
some people.
And get some prepaid cards.
as unlikely as it sounds, yeah. It's working to some extent, and that's why it continues.
That's too bad. It's kind of scary how that happens. Now, you know, Larry just mentioned that we had you on a couple months ago. Also talking about scams, and I think it's an important service that we do at the radio station, alerting folks of things like this. I'm curious, do we have more scams in Utah? Is it a bigger problem in Utah than in other states, or are we about average?
You know, based on some recent FTC numbers I've seen, we aren't necessarily worse than other states. I think what we are seeing as the worst of the worst scams are things that hit all states, and it's these imposter-type scams, like the one we're talking about here with Rocky Mountain Power. People need to watch for a couple key red flags, which is anytime someone calls you on the phone and asks you to pay through a wire transfer or through a prepaid reloadable card, hang up the phone, run, get away from it. It's a scam.
Yeah, the one I've been called about is Internal Revenue Service demanding payment for past due taxes. I could hear in the background that it was just a big boiler room. And in fact, you know, some supervisor was yelling obscenities at somebody else in the back.
Oh my goodness.
In the background. And so it was clear that this was not on the up and up, but likewise, that's you're just not going to be demanded to pay money instantly in any phone call from any reputable business.
That's right. And if you're concerned, if you get a call from somebody claiming to be with the IRS or Rocky Mountain Power, you can always, and this is what we advise people, you can always hang up the phone, pull out your last Rocky Mountain Power bill, and call the number on that bill. And they will talk you through if there are any problems with your account. But if it's these calls, there's not a problem. It's just that someone's trying to scam you.
You know, these scams are, excuse me, so sad because they're typically preying on people that can least afford to lose money like this. What are the potential settlements that people get? Is it, for the most part, once you fall victim to this scam, you're never going to see that money again? Or do people sometimes recover some money back?
You know, let's put this into a couple categories. The first category being the type of scam calls we're talking about with Rocky Mountain Power and the IRS. Once that money is gone, it's gone. If you're paying through a wire transfer, and you don't stop the wire transfer before it goes forward, many, I don't know, maybe most of these scams are perpetrated overseas. It's hard for us to track them. It's hard for the federal government to track them. And that money is almost certainly gone. A second category would be local scams of that nature, where we may be able to find who's behind it. And in that situation, may be able to bring some restitution. And then kind of a third broader category is it may be a local business, or it may be at least a domestic business that doesn't know the rules, needs to be educated on what the law requires. And often in those situations, the business wants to make it right. We are able to help people get restitution.
Yeah, you know, one thing I've heard on my cell phone coming in with great regularity now are our solar power salespeople. Are there any scams with those, or are they just legit and that's a hot sales area right now?
It's unfortunate that any place that a scammer can try and use a hot topic or get credibility, they will do it. And so even with solar, we've had reports of problems. In fact, a few months ago, we had a report of somebody that called claiming to be with the Public Utilities Commission, the Utah Public Utilities Commission. Now, the problem there is there isn't one. There isn't a Public Utilities Commission.
Well, there's a tip-off right there.
Right, but it sounds very official, right?
Right.
It sounds legitimate. And the kind of the pitch was, we're with the Utah Public Utilities Commission, and there's a deadline with the government. You need to act right away to receive special pricing on solar energy panels. And you can see how someone would think, this sounds legitimate. I need to take advantage of this opportunity.
But yet you think about it at a deeper level. Why would they be? Why would the government be calling people at random to offer them a deal?
Yeah, in hindsight, these things often, you know, they're pretty obvious. But unfortunately, at the time, they can be convincing. What about, you know, we're talking about people that call you. We're entering the spring, summer. There's housework to be done, painting of houses, changing of roofing tiles, things like that. What about the people that come door to door? Unfortunately, there are some scams involved there. What should people know to protect themselves from scams that might be coming to their front door?
And these can be tricky. It's a very good thing to bring up, especially when we have nice weather setting in and people are starting to think of those projects. You should always check to see before you hire someone if they have met all, you know, if it's a contractor, are they registered with the state? Do they have the proper licenses? Really, it's applying the same idea as these phone calls, which is, don't feel the need to enter a contract right now, right away. You should always take time to research it. Step back and tell the person you're happy to call them. You'd like to do some research first. There are lots of places you can go to hire the contracting needs that you may have or to get help. It's well worth taking the time to do the research rather than after the fact trying to recover losses.
You know, another topic in the news is Western Union and a settlement that you and other states have entered into with Western Union over wire transfers. Now, it gets used a lot, especially here in Park City, by seasonal workers sending money back home to South America, Central America, or Mexico. What was Western Union engaged in, and what was the settlement all about?
The settlement that Utah entered into, along with a series of other states, is closely related to a settlement that the Federal Trade Commission entered into with Western Union. And the Western Union settlement really is about these imposter-type phone calls. And the allegation that the FTC made is that Western Union knew or should have known that scammers were using their system to perpetrate fraud. So in these two related settlements, through the FTC settlement, $586 million has been opened up for restitution to former victims through these scams. And through both the FTC settlement and the state settlement, Western Union has agreed to put in new controls to up their fraud detection and prevention programs to hopefully prevent that means of transferring money from being used so frequently in these scams.
That sounds like a ton of money. I mean, that's over a half of $1 billion. Is that just because they've been a tool that's been used for so many years, or is it such a big problem each and every year?
I think it's both. If you think about it, you're absolutely right. Huge amount of money, and you can only assume that that represents a very small percentage of the fraud that was actually perpetrated. Where the FTC had data that showed that the company, Western Union, had received more than 550,000 complaints in a roughly 11-year period about these types of scams, just very large scale and over a long period of time. And it continues today, the scams do, hopefully less so with the aid of these wire transfers.
And I see with Western Union, 3,790 Utahns filed complaints over $4.6 million. So now hopefully they have a path to recover some of that money at least.
That's right. And it just goes to a point that you were making earlier, which is as crazy as these scams sound, they are working even here among our fellow Utahns.
Yeah. So, Daniel, consumer protection is a subject that's in the headlines right now. There's proposed cuts at the federal level for consumer protection. What kind of stats do you have? You know, do you have anything like, you know, for every dollar the state of Utah spends in consumer protection, we're likely, you know, preventing $100 of fraud? Or why is it important that we as a nation, we as a state, invest in this service?
That's a great question. And what I can say is that it can be very hard to quantify, you know, the prevention that happens as a result of consumer outreach, education efforts, and really just enforcement of the law. But we can measure, you know, direct restitution that comes through our cases. And so we have both of those things happening. Hundreds of thousands of dollars every year go back to consumers as a result of the cases that we take. And there's that component where we can't measure, are we, you know, how much are we keeping people from not falling victim to these scams, including through shows like this, where we can get out the word, watch out for the Rocky Mountain Power scam, watch out for using wire transfers for these fraudulent circumstances.
It's very important work, and we thank you for your service at the Utah Division of Consumer Protection. Our guest this morning has been Daniel O'Banion. Daniel, thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much.
And coming up next, we have Corey Finley. She is with Team Rubicon. They are sending a team of military veterans up to Box Elder County to help with potential flooding problems up there. You're listening to Mound Money on KPCW, and we'll be back in a moment.
This is Tom Roney with Berkshire Hathaway Home Services Utah Properties. We are committed to serving Park City and are proud supporters of KPCW. More information at bhhsutah.com or one of our 24 offices throughout Summit and Wasatch counties.
Hi, I'm Matt from San Francisco Design, longtime supporter of KPCW. We provide a mix of contemporary and mountain modern home furnishings for a unique Park City lifestyle. Our showrooms are in Park City and Salt Lake and offer complete design services. We're on the web at sanfrandesign.com. San Francisco Design, love your home.
Welcome back to Mound Money. We were just talking about, unfortunately, some of the worst of human behavior, and now we're going to talk about some of the best of human behavior. A group of volunteers called Team Rubicon, and we have Corey Finley with us this morning from Team Rubicon. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for having us today.
Sure. So Rubicon is a famous term, right? You've crossed the Rubicon, generally means you can't go back. What does Team Rubicon do, and why? What's the significance of the name?
The significance of the name comes from we bridge the gap for communities who have been affected by natural disaster by going in and helping them with cleanup and recovery, as well as the gap that many of our military veterans face when they leave the military and enter back into civilian life. One of our big purposes is to help them with regaining the community and purpose that they once served and often struggle with when they leave that service.
So this is a national organization, not terribly old. It was inspired by the first veteran, Jake Wood, who organized his own ad hoc relief team to go to Haiti after the earthquake there. And from that blossomed a national organization. And that really is veteran-focused. The slogan you have is, disasters are our business, veterans are our passion. How does it help veterans to volunteer and be part of this organization?
You know, it really gives veterans the ability to refocus their skills, to find a renewed sense of purpose. They find community and camaraderie within this group of volunteers that they had with their units when they were serving. And when they separate from the military, a lot of times they feel very isolated or alone. So the organization gives a lot of that back. It gives them the sense of purpose, like they're serving again, by going into these communities and helping the residents really in their worst day. It's allowing them to continue a service. They have a passion for service, and it gives that back to them.
You know, it's a big issue because people that serve, I mean, there's few jobs that you can have that have such a clear sense of purpose. And everybody you're working with in today's military has volunteered and signed up for that purpose. And the general work world just isn't that way, right? I mean, a lot of managers work to create that in the best, you know, get close, but I don't think anybody actually gets to match that. So, Corey, how did you get hooked up with the group, and why is what they're doing a passion of yours as well?
You know, I've always had the heart to serve others, to, you know, just be involved in communities, my community especially, but any community that really needs assistance. My brother's a EMT, and he started with Team Rubicon back in 2012, 2013, and I just saw the work that he was doing, the group of people that he was working with, and just the passion that they had to serve each other and serve others. And it was just something that I wanted to be involved with. Watching him do that, and then several opportunities came up in the future that I was able to register and sign up for Team Rubicon. I started doing some socials and service projects, and from there I was able to deploy with Team Rubicon on disaster response operations, help communities who had been affected by tornado and winter storm damages, and just continued with them from there.
So it's expensive to get volunteers from all over the country to different places. Do the veterans have to pay their own travel costs, or is that part of what the organization helps with?
So the volunteers themselves don't have to cover the expense of volunteering with them. The organization reimburses driving travel costs, dependent on the distance, the type of operation or event that's going on, how long it's going to last, different things like that. There are some guidelines and parameters in place to help determine how much is reimbursed. For anything that's considered a national operation, so which are type ones, very large disasters like Sandy, things like that, then the organization gets the volunteers there via plane, train, whatever, mostly flying. And we have several corporate sponsors, airlines that work closely with the organization to help provide flights, as well as there's some other organizations that collect donation air miles and things like that, then that the organization can apply to use for getting our volunteers out to the disaster zones.
Yeah, you know, there is FEMA, and there's the Red Cross, and there are local relief agencies. Is there a place for Team Rubicon? Are there enough disasters to go around? would be one way to put the question.
You know, we've never had a shortage of disasters, I guess.
It'd be nice to have a shortage of
disasters. It would, you know, and that's one of the challenges that we face as an organization and volunteers is obviously our purpose is to go in to disaster zones, but we also hate to wish that anyone has to be affected by one of those. One of the nice things about Team Rubicon is that if there's not a disaster in play at the moment, we have plenty of other things to keep our volunteers occupied. We do a lot of different trainings, from mental health trainings like assist to chainsaw operations, heavy equipment training, to your basic what's a muck out, which teaches volunteers what you do during a flood recovery op. So we always have something going on to keep our members engaged and keep those volunteers who want to be out, who want to be doing something with the organization, there's an opportunity for them to get out there.
So, Corey, you spend a lot of time with veterans, and I think all of us have a heart and appreciate their service. We also know, as I talked earlier, it's a tough transition for them coming back. What is something that people in the general public could do to maybe ease that transition for veterans? I think oftentimes people want to help, they just don't know how to help. So what do you wish the public knew about helping with that transition that maybe we don't know?
You know, it really is a lot of times recognizing that it's difficult and some of the difficulties that they're going through, such as, you know, the separation from their unit, you know, those people that they essentially became family with, the purpose that's no longer there, and just, you know, reaching out and saying, hey, you know, we appreciate what you did. Is there anything we can do to help you? You know, just closing that gap between a veteran and civilians and not, you know, realizing it's there and reaching out to it. And also helping organizations that are out there like Team Rubicon that have set up a program to help them.
If people want to support your organization, how can they do that?
The best way is to check out teamrubiconusa.org. It's our website. It'll give you lots of information on about who we are, what our mission is, and also how you can be involved either as a volunteer or to support us.
Yeah, have you seen among veterans you've worked with or have other members of Team Rubicon seen a difference in the veterans who come to work with you? I mean, there's a need on their part, like you say, to be part of a team and to be focused in delivering something. And you know, PTSD is much talked about and struggled with by a lot of veterans. Do you see veterans change for their service to Team Rubicon?
Definitely. You know, I can't tell you how many veterans that I've come in contact with that said, you know, I was lost. I didn't know what I was doing. I didn't know where I was going. And that in finding Team Rubicon, they found themselves again. They found a purpose. And it really helped them integrate back into civilian life. Not to mention, you know, like you said, a lot of struggle with PTSD, things like that. Having the community that Team Rubicon has given them allows them to have somewhere to turn. They have someone to call up or email if they need some support, say, hey, I need someone to talk to, you know, this is what's going on, and they feel like they have that safe place to turn.
Yeah, no, it's important work. You know, Park City has a lot of not-for-profits, and one of the nice things is we all do a little in an area that we're passionate about, and collectively it makes a big difference. So thank you for your work with Team Rubicon, and good luck with the volunteer program that you're going to be doing up at Box Elder County, helping them with some potential flooding issues. Our guest has been Corey Finley with Team Rubicon. Thank you, Corey.
Thank you.
And we'll be back to wrap up Mountain Money after this.
Additional funding for programming on KPCW has been provided in part by AMA Waterways and Park City Air, Cruise, and Travel, 565-4730, parkcityaircruiseandtravel.com. Park City Bike Demos, Kearns Boulevard next to Adolph's, parkcitybikedemos.com. Long, Reimer, Weiniger, Bepler, Estate Planning, Family Law, lrw-law.com, and the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, and listeners like you.
Welcome back to Mountain Money. Those were three fun conversations. Always enjoy talking to our guests. I also like leaving a couple minutes left over for Larry and I had to do a little chit-chat. And Larry, I heard on Leslie Thatcher's show this morning, the wrap-up of the Utah legislative session. It seems to me like they got a lot done this time.
With a minimum of controversy. You know, this is a one-party state, and I guess that makes things a lot easier. The dangers in that, though, are who's left behind. I think sometimes they don't consider other viewpoints. They went so far this session as to eliminate partisan divisions in
certain committees.
Advisory committees no longer have to have another political point of view recognized, and I do think that's a kind of a backward step there. You know, while this is a dominated by one party, there are plenty of people here who don't feel represented by that party.
Yeah.
And now on some of these boards, there is no guarantee that another voice ever will be heard. So
yeah,
I think that's a dangerous path that the legislature went down this
yeah,
session.
Yeah, I completely agree. The argument was expediency. But you know what? I think the political process is meant to be a little messy to make sure everybody does have at least a seat at the table. They may not be able to make the decision for the table, but you, in a political system, you do want people feeling they have a seat at the table. But I am grateful that it was not as controversial
and,
outside of that and
yeah,
a few
and
other
the,
topics.
The weighted pupil unit rose. The allocation.
Pretty significantly.
So there is more money for education. Usually there's just barely enough to stay even with growth, but this time they were able to fund both growth of the school population and the amount that will be spent per
yeah,
pupil.
I was really happy to see that. I think that's one area that we as a state still have some work to do in. I mentioned earlier being grateful that there wasn't a lot of controversy. I'm also grateful for the great sponsors of Mountain Money. They include Mountain West Bank, Berkshire Hathaway Home Services, Utah Properties, San Francisco Design, Jones Waldo, Holbrook and McDonough, All Resort Express, Park City Mountain, and Apex Residence and Viridian Park City, Columbus Pacific Properties. Larry, I mess that up every week, and I thank them for understanding. I will get it right eventually.
Maybe we should swap, and I'll do that, and you can thank our great guests. Mike Quincy, love talking to Mike with Consumer Reports. He's the car editor there. And I just find it amazing that they go out and buy every car. They don't want to get them. They don't want to get loaners from the factories because maybe the factories will soup them up before they deliver them.
Well, and
so
you
they just go to the local dealerships and buy them off the lot.
Yeah, no, it's great. And you also showed me a picture of that track. That is really something. That takes up a lot of space.
It's just carved out of the Connecticut forest, and I was amazed. There's like 40 people, automotive engineers and
it's a huge investment.
Testers of, and you know, I didn't know Consumer Reports, which doesn't accept any advertising. I don't know how they have an economic model that works. But
they're a not-for-profit.
They are a non-profit, and they are able to do a great analysis on things like best and worst cars. Poor Fiat. Fiat ends up at the bottom of the list every year. I rented one, and I thought it was a cute little car, but I only drove it a couple hundred miles.
You know, another one that ended up at the bottom that I rented and had fun with, which is the PT Cruiser. It was a fun car, but apparently you don't want to buy one.
Well, you can't anymore anyway. they discontinued them. At one point, there were two of those in my family, two college students, and they were great for hauling everything back and forth from campus to Park City again. So, but yeah, PT Cruisers are out. A lot of the Jeeps don't score well either, I
See,
guess.
See, Larry, you say you can't buy those. I'm a used car buyer, so you absolutely still can't
Well, actually,
buy those.
The PT Cruisers were such a radically different-looking car. It was like a throwback to the 30s, and it kind of had a cult following. And,
they did.
And they're actually, as a result, yeah, because you can't buy new ones, the used ones are holding their value quite well. Well, thanks for joining us this morning. Our guests were Mike Quincy, Daniel O'Bannon from the state, and Corey Finley from Team Rubicon. This is KPCW Park.